Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Offseason, a show covering the Miami Dolphins, the NFL, pop culture, drinking culture, and of course, professional wrestling. Now, here are your hosts, Alf Artiaga, and myself, Merrick Brave.
And welcome to The Offseason with Merrick Brave and myself, Alf Artiaga. There's only one more of these left before training camp starts, Merrick. So, we're in the home stretch. You have this show, and we have another one next week. And that's a wrap for this show, for the offseason. Maybe next year we'll have a longer run because we'll do it all offseason maybe.
But, yeah, I'm down for that, Alf.
But yeah, we only have one more. That's it. If you want to – and we're doing this show, by the way, live on our Discord OnlyFans. If you want to participate, you want to listen to these shows live, you go to discord.gg/OnlyFans. You become a member there for $3 a month. I guess let's talk a little Dolphins football here at the top of the show. It's been making the rounds. I don't know if you've been paying attention to all of these rankings that Jeremy Fowler conducted, a poll of about 80 executives around the NFL, and they rank each position group on every team. They evidently only like one player on our team, which is Javon Holland, which I've speculated, you know, people are like, who cares? It's just a poll. Well, you should care because these are the people that are making, that are handing out the money in the NFL. So they evidently
isn't Jeremy Fowler's ranking. I don't think people understand that. This isn't Jeremy Fowler sitting in his basement compiling a list of the top players for each position. These are executives and GMs and coaches and whatnot telling the world who they think are the best players in the National Football League. And what they're telling you is they think the Dolphins players suck, and that must mean Mike McDaniel is the best head coach in the history of the NFL. Right, Alf?
Absolutely. And they did it again last year. Our own CK, if you go on our Discord, I already gave you the handle. We have a 3YPC channel, which the hosts of 3YPC, myself, Simon Clancy, and Chris Kaufman, we post on there. He posted last year's rankings, and sure enough, last year's rankings had the Dolphins with essentially a talentless offense. Essentially, nobody was any good on that offense, except Tyreek. That's the only guy who had a ranking in the top 10, and you heard me correctly. The only guy on the offense last year that had a ranking in the top 10. Well, they were number one offense in the NFL. They were number two in scoring. Okay? So that tells you everything you need to know. Okay? So those rankings last year were not consequential. They did not reflect reality. This year, I don't think that they're reflecting reality as well. Now, this is a good thing for the Dolphins, I think, because it's essentially going to tell them, you know, it's going to give them a cue to tell their players, look, this is what the league thinks of you. So this is how we are planning on paying you. Now, there's two ways to look at that. You'll be able to build a better team because it's going to be under budget. Or players are going to look at that and say, man, this is not a place I can go to get recognition. So maybe I won't go there. You know, I think it's
a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Your head coach, it's a double-edged sword. Maybe these executives, they're attributing Miami's success to Mike McDaniel and his scheme and not the players. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. But also it's a way of players looking at it and say, well, they were really, really successful and they don't have stars everywhere. Although I think that's going to change this year. Okay, people are going to notice it, and then they're going to realize their fault, and they're going to say, you know what? Let's give credit to all these players because we don't want to give it to the quarterback. It's essentially what's going to happen. So maybe players are going to look at this and say, man, that's an environment I can go and flourish to then maybe get paid elsewhere. And that's why I'll take a smaller deal or a one-year deal to go, you know, put up a season and then get paid elsewhere. So it is a double-edged sword. I think it helps them a little bit. I think it hurts them in the Javon Holland, in Javon Holland's case. I think it's consequential. I think it matters. And I think this is a case where a simple poll released in July, not that it's gonna cost you Javon Holland, but it might force the Dolphins' hand on Javon Holland to probably tag him, franchise tag him. The tag, by the way, on safeties is $18.7 million for 2025. That's a lot of money.
So that's pricey.
It might force them to tag him to trade him or tag him to play him on a sixth or fifth season in this case. Yeah, it would be his fifth season, right? This is his fourth. Let me see, 21, 22, 23. Yeah, this is his fourth season. So to tag him for his fifth season. Because, yeah, he was a second-round pick, so he does not have a fifth-year option. So I think it might force their hand in that regard because if you could read between the lines, he's the fifth-ranked safety in this poll, and one GM actually had him as the best safety in this league. I would suggest go look at Antoine Winfield's numbers last year and compare them to Javon Holland and ask yourself when Javon Holland has ever had those numbers. I happen to like Javon Holland a lot, but if this is the case and this ranking is correct, and I was, you know, always put yourself in the player's shoes. If you believe this, and why not? It's a poll from executives in the NFL, and I'm Javon Holland. I'm telling my agent what Antoine Winfield got. He's older than I am. I want that. And what Antoine Winfield got was about $20 million a year, okay, with a big fat guarantee. So he's getting pricey.
Do you think there's going to be a market correction on safety salaries here soon? You're already seeing some of these guys like Justin Simmons, who's on the market right now. He's available. Any team can pick him up. These teams have gotten their post-June 1st money. They've been sitting on it for over a month now, about a month and a half. And he is still a free agent. Do you think there's a correction coming? And do you think that could actually hurt Javon Holland and maybe help the Dolphins to be able to keep him?
It only takes one, right? It only takes one general manager to say, nah, this is what I want. I want Javon Holland at a lot of money. You can watch the Hard Knocks, off-season Hard Knocks with the New York Giants, and you could see how frivolous a GM can be with his own with the money, okay? Because he's reading an email from the NFL that's telling him, look, the cap went up this much, right? And you can see right away Shane, the general manager from the Giants, immediately going to, okay, this means I could spend this. So he's already thinking about spending right up to the cap just because the NFL told them that the cap had increased. That impulse, all it takes is one general manager to have that impulse and say, I have it, I like the player, hand it to him. And then Javon Holland is a Carolina Panther. Or Javon Holland is a Washington
Buffalo Bill.
Or a fair warning.
I'd hate to see it.
Because I've told everybody this several times. There's one team in particular that will have the cap space and has a need at the position. The Buffalo Bills are a team in that regard. So not that he would want to go to Buffalo because, and the second thing I want to talk about here is Jonnu Smith is a Dolphin lifer now because of his comments. But if he wanted to and the Bills wanted to pay him, that's a team. That's a team that can pay him.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So speaking of Hard Knocks, Alf, you've been watching the off-season Hard Knocks, I take it. I'm actually really enjoying this because I like to see the inner workings, the behind the scenes of how a football team is put together, almost more so than I like to see the players and the coaches during the preseason or the in-season Hard Knocks. You know, fantasy football guy in me, I suppose. Is Joe Shane kind of like, does he come across as a dope to you? Because he feels a little dopey to me.
He does.
Does he make it look like being a GM in the NFL isn't as hard as maybe I had thought it was at one point in my life?
It seemed to me like, first of all, he had his director of player personnel, whatever, whoever that guy is. His evaluation of some of those free agents was, like, you know how people say spot on? What is the direct opposite of spot on? Like, ass backwards,
way
maybe?
The fuck off.
Yeah, way the fuck off is a good thing. At the combine, it wasn't the combine. I think it was the Senior Bowl. Was that the Senior Bowl where that GM says, sounds like they want to give us 2 ones for Brian Burns? And yeah, he's almost like giggling. Yeah, like, look, there's a lot of times that, you know, I'm completely committed to buying something and I feel it. I could sense it where the salesperson is like, this person has me completely over a barrel. You know what I mean? And I'm willing to, you know, and then I sell myself, be willing to walk away. You don't need this. Okay. You don't need this. You know, don't give in here. Stick to your guns on what you want. Negotiate a little harder. Shane was essentially just completely sold on Brian Burns. And then you see him in this latest episode where he's just throwing out like 2 twos will do it. Like he's actually like bidding himself up. Like who the hell is going to pay Brian Burns what you paid him? You know what I mean? Drive a harder bargain. Yeah, he does seem kind of dopey.
And they did end up trading a second and a fifth rounder. And actually, the second rounder was number 39 overall. So it wasn't like a late second rounder either.
No, and then they paid him $1 billion, okay, which is part of it, okay? Like if you're paying for an ascending player, you know, that's a difference. You know, you're basically paying for a ready-made player and then paying a premium for it. And for those of you that are going to say, ah, but the Dolphins, Bradley Chubb, Dolphins paid 25th overall and paid a lot less money, okay, for Bradley Chubb, 25th overall. And remember, those were surplus picks that they were trading. Giants are not trading surplus picks. These are picks that they had. So,
and the Dolphins had a much better roster than the Giants currently have.
Yes. You know, Bradley Chubb was like kind of a finishing touch to the the roster as presently constituted at that time. So,
what
did
you make
does,
of his evaluation of Christian Wilkins there?
Yeah, it was completely off. Well, it wasn't really his evaluation. It was his director of pro personnel that was saying Christian Wilkins is not a guy that could get to the quarterback on third down when all of his pressures basically came on third down last year.
That's literally all he did.
Yeah, all he did was get to the quarterback on third down last season. So
where do we sign up? How do we get jobs in an NFL front office? Because I feel like we could do as good of a job as at least the Giants front office has
been
doing.
I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. I came away completely unimpressed, and actually this was my biggest criticism of Joe Shane was his phone call with Saquon Barkley.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he almost seemed afraid to talk. He's a human being. Like, did you see, you saw the movie Moneyball?
Yes, of course.
When Billy Bean is talking to Paul D. Podesta, by the way, they didn't name him Paul D. Podesta. What's this guy's name? His character in the movie?
Oh, God, I don't know.
But the actor, what's the actor's name? I keep forgetting his name.
Let's see.
What the hell is that character's name? Anyways.
Jonah Hill?
Jonah Hill. Yeah,
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, he played a fictional character, which is actually Paul D. Podesta. Okay, that's who he was playing. He tells him, look, you got to learn how to do some of this stuff, how to cut a player or send a player down. And Billy Beaton says, this is the way you do it. You tell him, I think they were talking about Magnante. They were telling him, Dan, I got to let you go. It's what's best for the team. That's it. That's all you got to do. All right? And there's an example there where he brings a guy, he sits him down, and he tells him, you've been traded to the Tigers. This is Ed Wade's phone number. You could call him to make arrangements to fly you out there to Detroit. You know, it's as simple as that. These are human beings. You want to give it to them straight. And like he says, would you rather get, you know, five bullets to the chest or one to the brain, you know? And then at that point, Jonah Hill says, are those my only choices? But it's the
truth.
I mean,
not to pile on Joe Shane in a Dolphins podcast, but he's dogging Saquon, saying he's going to be expensive and he's older, and we know what happens when running backs reach the age of 27. And then he went out and signed Devin Singletary, and Devin Singletary is not that much younger than Saquon Barkley, and a hell of a lot less electric than Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and you know, if you're letting Saquon Barkley go is because you want to rebalance your books, you want to rebalance your budget at each position group, right? Because you know, you do sit down. I would have liked to have seen, although they weren't going to release that, you know, to the NFL, because then the NFL knows what they're spending at each position group. But you do sit down and you say, all right, the cap is what? The cap is this. Okay, we want to spend this much on running backs, this much on wide receivers. If you're dumping $10 million in salary from Saquon Barkley, you don't move that salary elsewhere. You kind of want to save some of it. Maybe you draft a guy, try to stay cheap, so you can move that money into another position, especially since now you're spending a whole ton on edge players because you're paying Brian Burns a pile of money, right? He went out into the free agent market and signed a Devin Singletary.
Like on day one.
That makes absolutely no sense.
And by the way, Devin Singletary turns 27 5 days before the Giants' first game of 2024.
Yeah, that makes absolutely zero sense.
Which was his age for when running backs fall off a cliff now. Which, by the way, if running backs are falling off of a cliff at age 27, like, don't draft them, right? Just don't even do it. You're going to get 3 or 4 years out of these guys, and then they're going to be gone.
Or use late picks, you know?
Yeah.
Use picks past the fourth round.
Speaking of Dolphins contracts, you touched on the Bradley Chubb deal. You know, Dolphins traded for him, gave him a big deal. You know, we're still in limbo on this Tua contract. We're still in limbo on this Tyreek contract that may or may not be happening. I don't know what's going on there. I kind of want to play a game with you. You know, we've talked about Javon Holland a little bit. I want to play a game with you, Alf, and I know we didn't talk about this beforehand, but I want just a yes or no, and then maybe an explanation. Will this player see another contract with the Miami Dolphins? Gun to your head, on July 12th, 2024, will this player see another contract with the Miami Dolphins? Let's start with Javon Holland, because we already talked about him a little bit. Does Javon Holland see another contract with the Miami Dolphins, or does he leave after this year? Does he get tagged and then leave? Does he get tagged and traded? Or do they sign him to a 3 or 4 year extension? What's your gut feeling, Alf?
If I had to guess, I think they play a game of chicken and they'll tag him. You know that Chris Greer is a guy that is going to hold to his guns. Who knows what he's going to ask for Javon Holland. If he could get a second round pick, maybe he tags and trades him. But I really don't see Javon Holland getting another deal here unless he absolutely goes nuts this season. He has a monster year. And then you're sitting around and you're like, you know what? Let's just keep him. And let's just extend him here for 2-3 years. So that's the way I feel about Javon Holland.
So more likely a trade candidate than an extension for Javon Holland.
Yeah. He'll play this season, and then in the offseason we'll see where we're at. But
okay, next
those
one.
His numbers are going to be important. His season, his 2024 is – like, he's playing for dollars this season, which is a good thing for Dolphin fans and the Dolphins.
Next one, Jalen Phillips. Can the Dolphins afford to pay a premier pass rusher like Jalen Phillips what he's going to command on the market when his rookie deal is up? Jalen Phillips, does he get extended by the club or does he get let go?
I spoke about this on OnlyFans. I think that Jalen Phillips is the guy most likely to bet on himself because the bet is worth taking. He has a fifth-year option on the way, right? So he'll be here. You know, he'll be here this coming season. The following season. Okay, he'll be here for 2025. He'll be playing on the fifth-year option. All right? So he's not a free agent in 2025. He is the most likely to bet on himself. Think about it. He has this season. He has next season. If you tag him, it's about $24 million and change. Okay? He's going to want that at a minimum per season. And if he could fire off a big year, then he's going to put himself into the conversations of somewhere around $30 million a year. And wow. He is the next guy to get a big contract like a Brian Burns. Okay.
And I saw you, and maybe this is breaking news here for the greater world here, but on OnlyFans you mentioned Jalen Phillips seems to think he'll be ready by the start of the season. Do you want to expound upon that a little bit, Alf?
Yeah, that seems to be, players always talk like this. And ours seem to talk more like that more than anybody else. I'm interested to see if that's the truth, if that'll happen. You can count the months and the weeks, and you could reasonably expect Jalen Phillips to be ready in the first quarter of the season, meaning the first four games. He should be ready to play. These guys always do the same thing. They always vow, look, I'll be ready for week one. So we shall see. Training camp is 11 days away. I can't wait to be there because that way I get to get eyes on these guys and see what they look like and see them working on the side and see how close or how far they are to actually contributing in an actual NFL game. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit if Jalen Phillips is out there for week one.
One thing to consider, this Dolphins regime, Mike McDaniel in particular, very careful with injured players. They do seem to give them extra weeks off during the season. So I don't think McDaniel is going to be pressing Jalen Phillips to be ready for week one. So he's really going to have to impress the staff and the medical staff if he is out there week one. So we will see on that. All right, next guy I want to mention, Alf. Will this player see an extension with the Dolphins, or will he be playing elsewhere shortly? Liam Eichenberg.
This is his shit or get off the pot season, isn't it?
This is it.
He's either gonna be really, really good and he will get extended, or he's just average and I think they let him walk because, believe it or not, average in the NFL gets paid. And we've already seen what they consider an expenditure on the interior offensive line. Aaron Brewer, we talked about this when Mike McDaniel came in here with the Shanahan system. CK talked at length. They would spend money at center. And sure enough, that has been their ethos. That has been what they've done. They spent money in converting Connor Williams to center. They gave him a nice little chunk of change. And they did it again with Aaron Brewer. He's now the center. So they do like spending money on centers. They've shown they'll spend money on tackles. At guard, they've shown that they've let Robert Hunt walk, and everybody else that they've signed at the position has signed for nearly the minimum. So if he asks for anything above the, I think it's $3.4 million that he's getting paid this season, he'll be gone, no matter how good he is, because it's just something that they don't believe in spending money on. So
interesting.
If I had to bet, this is Liam Eichenberg's last season here. I think he'll be just okay. And if he's just okay, he'll be gone.
And I don't think a lot of Dolphins fans, at least currently, would be too sad to hear you say that. You know, if he has an Austin Jackson-esque, glow up here under Butch Berry, then I think the Dolphins would be happy about that, and the fans would be happy about that too. So we'll see. Next guy, he's been loud about wanting a new deal, but maybe he's dialed that back a little bit recently. Tyreek Hill, he is under contract for this season, 2025 and 2026, although the 2026 number is an absurd $56 million plus on the cap hit there, so definitely some restructuring would need to be done. Do you think Tyreek Hill gets a new deal this offseason or next offseason to stay in Miami? He's also mentioned possibly wanting to retire after his time in Miami is over. What do you think is going to happen with Tyreek? Does he see another deal in Miami? Does he retire a Dolphin, or do the Dolphins trade him to somebody else and try and recoup some draft picks, those draft picks that they gave up to Kansas City a couple years back?
I think that they'll rework 2025 because I think they're operating on this little window here. and they're going to want to maximize it. And to maximize it, you got to look at Jalen Waddle's contract. Remember, everything is done with this in mind, because you really don't want to dig into the contract every single year. You really only can dig into them once, okay, essentially. So if you look at Jalen Waddle's extension, when it kicks in, you could basically kiss Tyreek Hill goodbye. It kicks in 2026. So I think they'll rework something for 2025. So I think Tyreek Hill is here this coming season and the following season, and then will be elsewhere, maybe retired in 2026. Although that'll be something, right? He fires off two monster years, 2024, 2025. Then what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so we shall see.
First world problems on that. And then, of course, Alf, what Dolphins podcast would it be if we didn't talk about quarterback Tua Tagovailoa? I know we talk about it every week, but I got to ask you again. Does Tua see another deal with Miami, or does he possibly play on the fifth-year option, maybe gets a franchise tag, maybe he doesn't, maybe he gets traded to a team? I've heard you mention the Raiders. I've heard you mention the Saints. Both of those teams play in domes, which would be good for Tua Tagovailoa, you know, considering his cold weather woes. Does Tua Tagovailoa see another deal with Miami, or will the Dolphins once again be looking for their franchise quarterback if Tua Tagovailoa does leave after a year or two?
I think that they'll extend him here shortly. There's 11 days left for training camp. I don't see how, for the life of me, they're going to play out this fifth-year option. They're going to have him play on the fifth-year option. It'll be a mess. I don't see much upside to having him play on the fifth-year option. I've explained this a million times, okay? And even some of the, you know, let him play on the fifth-year option guys are starting to see the light and see where this is going if you let him play on the fifth-year option. None of the options are any good, and some of them are downright stupid, like I've mentioned before. Can you imagine when you let him play on a fifth-year option? He asks out. Now you got to trade him. First of all, if you tag him to trade him, you hold up all of that cap space. And holding up all that cap space might preclude you from actually signing a adequate replacement like a Dak Prescott, let's say. So you essentially are screwing yourself. So it makes zero sense to have him play on the fifth-year option. I think they'll work something out here. I think that they're going to take it right down to the wire. I can't see why they would let it linger into the training camp season and in the preseason games. So there's 11 days. If I had to bet on over, under 11 days for the extension, I'm going to bet under. I'll say it happens before training camp starts on the 23rd.
I'd love to be able to talk to an extension with you before our last episode, 7 days from today. I don't know if it'll get done. No, I'm hoping you're right. I hope it does get done. Would love to see Tua stay here long term. I mean, we've sat through the years between Dan Marino and now where we watched guys like Cleo Lemon start for the Miami Dolphins. That's a real player, people. Cleo Lemon started games for the Miami Dolphins in the time between Dan Marino and now, Tua Tagovailoa. So I'd love to see a deal get done. All right, Alf. That's enough football talk. I think by now our listeners know we like to talk a little pro wrestling too. You're a pro wrestling fan. I'm a pro wrestling fan and pro wrestling coach and pro wrestler myself. So we do a little pro wrestling talk here. And today we decided, you know, kind of in the vein of last week's episode, we're going to do a top 10 list. And this week's top 10 list involves finishing maneuvers, finishers, top 10. We've each compiled our lists. We're gonna deliver them to you now. We're gonna give explanations for.
Are we gonna build our list?
Rank them.
I think we're gonna. We decided that we're gonna build the list live on the air.
Like oh, did, okay, all right. Well,
like
I'm ready.
Did, like we did last week. Now these and, have to
and
be.
We didn't discuss this ahead of time.
Yeah, we have not. This have to be. This has to be finishing moves. Meaning, you deliver the move, you get a pin. Match is over. It can't be like, for example, Sami Zayn's Blue Thunder Bomb. It's a beautiful maneuver. It looks absolutely great. He's never pinned anybody off of it in his life. Okay.
Little inside baseball here. We call those false finishes.
Yes.
Or falsies.
Right. Or one of my favorite maneuvers is Kevin Owens. I don't know what he calls it, but it's a brain buster from, he does it from the second rope. You've seen it? He looks like he's absolutely murdering somebody. He's never pinned anybody off of it.
Right.
But it looks absolutely spectacular. He looks like he's absolutely killing you. So he does that move to you. It looks awesome. Seth Rollins rolling suplexes.
The superplex into the Falcon's Arrow. Yeah.
It looks absolutely awesome. He always gets a two count.
Always.
Yeah. That thing's on a magnet. All right.
I always yell at him for that one. I'm like, you do realize you're 38 years old, right? You don't need to be doing that every match.
He's actually has a couple of them. All right. His buckle bomb. It's awesome.
Yep.
It looks great. Yep. It looks devastating. Never get a, well, except one guy in particular. I know he's pretty sore about that. He ended one guy's title reign on that. I know he was pretty, was he sore about that, by the way? The Finn Balor ending Finn Balor's title reign so quickly with a buckle bomb. First of all, you're on Raw. What the hell are you doing taking a buckle bomb on the barrier? Things can go wrong. You just became champ. Why? Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that was an unfortunate thing that happened there. To tell you the truth, and Balor would agree, that was 100% Balor's fault on that.
Yes.
You know, all Rollins can do is put you in position, and it's not like he's driving you through that thing. He's tossing you like he would in the ring or any other opponent. He's tossing you just like that. Balor's key mistake on that one, and I'm a wrestling coach, you know, that's what I do for a living. And day one, when I teach you how to bump, when I teach you how to fall on the mat, I will tell you never, ever, ever reach behind you and try and break your fall with your arm, because all you're going to do is either injure your shoulder or your elbow. If you're lucky, you'll injure your wrist only, but you're going to injure your arm in one way, shape, or form if you reach behind you when taking a bump. And the buckle bomb into the barricade is just a bump, you know, kind of vertically, right? You're trying to hit the barricade with a flat back. He, unfortunately, if you go back, you slow it down, he reached behind him. I don't know if he was nervous about taking or what the deal was, if he felt he was a little too far away. He reaches behind him, and when he reaches behind him, he separates his shoulder, and I don't know if he tore a rotator cuff or what he did there, but unfortunately, you know, these things happen. It is pro wrestling, despite the fact that what we do is scripted. The dangers involved in pro wrestling are real. You know, I can speak firsthand. I've had spinal fusion surgery. I've had a torn bicep. I've cracked a hip. I've separated multiple shoulders. I've lost teeth. I've broken noses. You know, it is what it is. But unfortunately, on that one, that was definitely Balor's fault, and I think he would agree too. But those guys in real life, real good pals. In fact, we have some hand-painted watercolors, I guess you would say, from Finn Balor at my training school, Black and Brave Wrestling Academy, that I run with Seth Rollins. He painted us. And this.
Let me tell you about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. With the finals over, the hoops action doesn't stop on Prize Picks. Women's basketball is still heating up, with stars like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese looking to make names for themselves alongside greats like Breanna Stewart and Asia Wilson. You could win up to 100 times your cash watching them ball out. If you're looking for promotions, Prize Picks has got you covered every week. From lowering select players' stat projections on Tuesdays to help your lineup hit, or getting your entry fees back if you have a losing lineup on Fridays. Football is on the way, so do what I do and make Monday and Thursday night football more interesting. Play more or less on everything from passing yards to sacks to punt attempts. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the promo code 3YARDS, that's the number 3YARDS, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the code 3YARDS on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less, it's that easy. Prize Picks.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This was post shoulder injury. He painted us some paintings and mailed them to us, and we keep them displayed at our facility. So,
by the way, am I correct?
They're still cool.
Am I correct in thinking that the demon has never been pinned, has never lost a match?
I don't know. My memory is awful. We'd have to Google that.
Yeah, I think he's never lost a match, and I think that that's an explanation. I know somebody, I was having a conversation with somebody. I'm like, oh, where's the demon? And I'm like, I don't think they want to bring him out because he never loses. So why would you bring him out? It's like a cue to fans, you know? Like, hey, he ain't losing tonight, you know? It has to be a complete surprise. And maybe you swerve him by having him lose as the demon.
You know? And the demon's more of a babyface type character, and he's been a heel for a couple of years now. So,
yeah. Another caveat.
All right, Alf.
Another caveat for our list. We cannot. It has to be finishing moves. One person. So we're not going to put.
No tag team moves.
Right. Because if not, it'll be the Doomsday Device, which is the greatest tag team finishing move of all time. people that are wondering, what the hell is the Doomsday Device? This guy's speaking Mandarin. It's the Legion of Dooms, the Road Warriors finishing move. They carry the guy onto the shoulders, usually. Animal picks him up, puts him on his shoulders. Here comes Hawk off the top rope, clothesline. Guy dies. You pin him. 1, 2, 3.
Fun fact about that move: I actually in the match where I broke my neck in the ring, I got up after injuring myself, and I was going to finish the match. And the finishing move that I was going to take to be pinned 1, 2, 3 was a Doomsday Device. So,
Jesus.
It's a good thing that the promoter came down to the ring and told me, "Stay down. We're calling you an ambulance. You need to go to the hospital." So,
yeah,
ended up not taking that one.
Yeah, it's always best to take that move in a more devastating manner. So that way you could essentially just land on your knees or your feet. You know what I mean?
Do a full flip,
because if you land on the back of your neck, all kinds of bad things can happen times. All right? So, yeah, no finishing maneuvers by tag teams. None. All right, let's start this.
I got my number one, Alf.
Well, let's do some nominations, and then we'll build the list.
Okay.
All right? So
sure.
Maybe I could write them down, or you want me to write them down?
Yeah, I got a little notes app down here. I can keep track as well.
All right, so I'll give you a couple of nominations, and you can give a couple of nominations. Then we'll build the top 10.
Okay.
Let me nominate Triple H's pedigree.
I love the pedigree, man.
Great looking move. It looks devastating. I don't remember people kicking out of it, and when they do it, they have. It's a big deal.
Yeah,
you know,
on the big pay-per-views, WrestleMania, SummerSlam.
Yeah, talk about a pop. Guy, you see the pedigree. It's a wrap. It's the match. Guy kicks out of it. Yeah, that's a big deal. So I got to nominate the pedigree.
I used the pedigree as a finisher myself during some of my later heel runs before I reached this stage of my career, which is crippled old man. But pedigree, great finishing move. I like that one. That's a good one. Let me give one to you. Let me see how you feel about this. We didn't talk about this. I don't know how you feel about submission holds. This is kind of a submission hold. I'm going to go with Mankind's Mandible Claw. How do you feel about that one, Alf?
Here's a problem with it. Okay. If we put the Mandible Claw, and it's completely different from the claw, okay, that the Von Erichs used,
mm-hmm.
are they different holds? Because
yeah, they are.
Because they were both used in two ways, okay? Your opponent will either submit or they use it to pin you. Like they bring you down to the ground, you're in so much pain, you forget to lift your shoulder, you're pinned. But the mandible claw, you know what? I'd put it over the claw. I would put it over the claw, and I know it might be sacrilege to some, but the mandible claw meant something. And then it became Mr. Sacco. You know, leave it to Mick Foley.
It's gross. It's so gross.
Leave it to Mick Foley to turn a comedy spot into something that's pretty devastating. Yeah, so, like, really applied? Yeah, that hurts. So.
Oh, definitely. And you know, just almost a demoralizing way to lose a match as well. You know, adding insult to injury. You know, somebody shoving their fingers down your throat. And oftentimes, like you mentioned, Alf, those fingers are covered in sweaty gym sock. So very disgusting, but I do like the mandible claw. Do you got another one for me?
Yeah, let's get the girls in here. I don't know how you can't put her. I got two, but I want to whittle it down to one. Becky's disarmer, I like it.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with it. It's just one move away from an armbar.
It essentially is just a Fujiwara armbar.
Yes. So I'm going to toss that one. And I'm going to put one that, man, it was made famous by shoots. So why wouldn't it be famous as a wrestling maneuver? And I understand she was kind of a part-timer, although she was full-time for about 2 years. Ronda Rousey's armbar has to be in there. Because, first of all, she pulled it off in many different ways. She used it as a running armbar. She used it as a flying armbar, which she actually pulled off in a UFC match. So it's world famous. Like, she built a division in UFC off of it. And then got the move completely over in the WWE by having, and she said she wanted to protect it, and why not? She told anybody, look, I'll lose to anybody, but nobody can ever kick out of my armbar. Nobody can ever break my armbar. So I'm gonna nominate Ronda Rousey's armbar as a finisher.
She is a badass. The ring that is at my gym right now came directly from Ronda Rousey's house.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's my connection to Ronda Rousey there.
Let's file this under quite weird questions that nobody wants answered but me. What is a regulation ring, meaning a ring that you would actually bump on and put a show on? What does that cost?
Mm-hmm. So I've seen them built,
by the way. I've seen them put up, so, and they're completely different from a boxing. A boxing ring... Yes. Might as well be the moon compared to a wrestling ring. So a wrestling ring, what does one
in a boxing
cost?
Ring.
That's
wrestled
that's
in
insane.
A boxing ring. You do not want to wrestle in a boxing ring. They are so stiff. There's no give in there. I think a lot of people think that wrestling rings have like springs underneath them.
They
that's
do
not true. It's just steel beams, kind of a lattice cross on most of them, and then just some wood on top of that, and maybe an inch of padding. And not very soft padding on at that. So it's not as soft as you might think. In fact, it's not soft,
it's,
but
it's you're bumping on plywood, neoprene, and on a bunch of I-beams, neoprene and canvas. That's it.
That's it. Yeah. And to anyone who thinks it's easy, I welcome you to come to my school after you've paid your tuition, by the way, because I need to pay my mortgage. But I'll give you a tutorial, show you how to bump, and you can tell me how it feels after you've learned. But as far as the price of a wrestling ring, it just depends on which one you want. Like a WWE ring, I would imagine, would cost quite a bit because they're custom made. That you're typically not going to get a WWE-style ring if you're wrestling on an independent show. Those rings are used like 5 times a week when you consider live events and whatnot. So they're a little bit stiffer. They got to be built a little sturdier to withstand that type of punishment. So an independent ring, though, you can get a 16-foot ring. You can get an 18-foot ring. WWE uses a 20x20 ring, so they're slightly smaller. You can even get something called a pony ring, which sits about 1.5 to 2 feet off of the ground, so about half the size of a WWE ring. And that's usually about a 16-foot by 16-foot ring. So if you're going to get a brand new 18x18 ring, which is standard for the indies, It has to be delivered. You're typically going to get it from a company called High Spots based in North Carolina. Back in the day, 20 years ago, when my company first got our ring, you could get it for about $4,000. But today you're looking anywhere between $10,000 and $13,000, and they will deliver it and show you how to set it up. Maybe we can get you one, Elf.
Yeah. You know, have you ever been to Key West?
I've been to Miami. I always get confused the differing names for the neighborhood. So I've been to South Florida and Miami, but not Key West.
Well, Key West is the southernmost point in the United States. It's about 4.5 hours from Miami. So you have to go all the way down south through all the Keys, every little island, all the way to the end. And if you go all the way to the end, you go to Hemingway's house. And when you take the tour of Ernest Hemingway's house, which is it's at the end of Duval Street, it's right next to the lighthouse. They explain to you that he set up a boxing ring in his backyard for when he bought his house, and he would use it to settle disputes. When he would go to the bar, people would have disputes, and he'd be like, if you guys want, I have a boxing ring, and I got gloves. We could go back to my house, and we could settle this later on. We'll fight 3 rounds. So yeah, if I had a backyard, I probably would have a wrestling ring. I would never use it. You know, and I would use it for, you know, for sparring, boxing, whatever to work out. But yeah, but you need great. A lot of space. Yeah, I've seen a boxing ring. Usually they're 20 by 20. Sometimes they'll negotiate for a guy who's more of a guy who wants to cut off the ring or more of a brawler or puncher. And he's going to want an 18-foot ring. I've seen a WWE ring up close. And yes, it's much bigger than some indie rings that I've seen before. Like the indie rings just seem... Like, I saw an AEW show a while back, and it felt like that was not a 20 by 20 ring. I went to a WWF show, and yes, that felt like a big 20 by 20 ring. So,
well, I own 2 18 by 18s, and I'm in possession, renting essentially, a 20 by 20 WWE ring as well. So I have 3 wrestling rings in my possession currently, which seems absurd. I don't think I've ever vocalized that. But. All right, back to these finishing maneuvers. We've got a few on the list. I think we got to start putting out some heavy hitters, man. And, Alf, I don't know. I think this is my number one. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't. I got to go with the Stone Cold Stunner, man.
Yes.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
First of all, nobody kicks out of it, right?
That's it.
And now Kevin Owens has taken it over. I love that he actually went to Steve Austin and told him, hey, can I use your finishing move? And by the way, you will listen to others talk about this. By the way, that move was used before Steve Austin. But he made it famous, so he gets to lend it out, and he told Kevin Owens, yes, you can use it. I have one problem with it. People are kicking out of it. I don't like people kicking out of signature moves like the Stone Cold Stunner. It absolutely belongs. Put him on the list. And I might even agree with you. It might be the number one finishing move, but just put it on the list on the nominations and we'll keep going. Let me throw out a nomination. This is an odd one. Some people are going to say, wait a minute, you're calling that a finishing maneuver? Yes, I'm calling it a finishing maneuver because it's iconic. When you see it, you know it, and usually it ended a match, and that's Randy Savage off the top rope with his elbow.
Beautiful.
First of all, it looked great how he did it. It looked devastating, and people didn't kick out from it. And it signaled to you, okay, we're going home right here. He's up at the top rope. He's signaling to the crowd, this is happening. He hits it, 1, 2, 3. Or he misses it, and we might have a finish the other way. So, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm going to nominate Randy Savage's elbow off the top rope. I loved it when Bayley brought it back and did an homage to it. I wanted Bayley to start using it as a finishing maneuver. Of course, they didn't. They used it as a false.
I mean, it takes a toll on your body coming up from that high and landing on your hip like that. You know, he was snug with it. Randy was snug with it, but he was safe with it. He didn't hurt people with it. So I like that one. Here's another one. If I told you my Stone Cold Stunner was number one, this is my number two, but it's a very close number two. I could have argued for it number one. And that's the Tombstone Piledriver, yes. Undertaker. What do you think of that one, Alf?
I remember when I saw it for the first time, I was like, okay, this is not a pile driver. By the way, if we're going to nominate pile drivers, there's just so many. You have Jerry the King Lawler did a pile driver, very famously did a pile driver. Paul Orndorff did a pile driver. There's too many pile drivers, so it's hard to nominate a pile driver. The Tombstone pile driver, when I saw it for the first time, I was like, oh my God, like this thing looks great. There's a really good clip on the internet of Stone Cold. I'm not Stone Cold. It's, I forgot which wrestler. I think it's Mark Henry is telling Undertaker, hey, when you did your Tombstone pile driver for the first time on Coco Beware, you were way too snug with it. And supposedly Coco Beware told him, hey, man, you almost killed me. And Undertaker famously apologized, but then made a big deal about, man, this guy doesn't drop it. You know, he keeps saying that I almost killed him. Like, leave it. Like, drop it already. You're giving me a bad reputation. There's a very famous clip on the internet. You can look it up. I think it's on his podcast. It's on the Dead Man's podcast. I think it's called 6 Feet Under, where he's still arguing, like, nah. You know, I wasn't snug with it. I didn't kill him. I didn't do anything. They showed him the video of him giving Coco Beware the Tombstone, and he's like, oh, my God. And, yes, go watch it. It does look like, yes, he murdered Coco Beware. It was the end of Coco Beware.
Still working on that one.
Yeah. So, yes, the Tombstone pile driver, absolutely. You saw it. It signaled something. People kicked out of it. It was a massive deal. Somebody in the chat nominates, let's just put both of them in there, and then maybe we want to put them, maybe we don't want to put them. Both of them end up as false finishes, but the People's Elbow and the Rock Bottom, of course, right?
Very iconic. I don't know, man. Just coming from my perspective with the People's Elbow, very iconic, very cool, very flashy, but doesn't look very devastating, you know.
Well, it was made as a rib.
Randy Savage's.
It was created as a rib. You know that, right? You know the story behind the people's elbow.
I mean the story.
Okay, The Rock tells the story, and it's changed a few times, but it's been corroborated by people that were in the business at the time. He was trying to get the Undertaker to pop. Okay, and this is when everybody was at the time when. The Undertaker famously would never leave character. So Vince tried to get The Undertaker to pop. And at this time, it was The Rock was... He had left the Nation of Domination. Remember when he was in that faction? And he was wrestling The Godfather, okay? And I think The Godfather at the time was Kama. I'm not certain or not.
Kama Mustafa.
So he was wrestling him. And he was like... And they got together. You know, let's pop The Undertaker. Let me finish you with an elbow. And Kamo's like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm figuring this out. Look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hit the ropes twice. I'm going to jump over you. I'm going to hit you with a rock bottom. You're going to be flat on your back. So you're essentially going to be finished. So you're going to get to protect yourself a little bit. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to, you know, like, it's okay if you lose to a roll up, you know what I mean? Or to a small package. It's happened before. But you don't want to lose to a shitty looking maneuver. So he was going to take the finisher, which was the rock bottom, and then he was going to give him the People's Elbow, and they were going to use that to pop the Undertaker. So they do the rock bottom, so it's a match, right? You're going to get the 1-2-3 here, but no. He does the whole spiel. He takes off his elbow pad, throws it into the crowd, and the crowd is going nuts over this. And he hits the ropes 3 times, hits him with the People's Elbow, gets the 1-2-3. Crowd loses it, and he's like, I'm going to incorporate this thing. But it was originally done it was originally done as a rib for The Undertaker.
If you knew how many things in wrestling resulted out of people just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what stuck, you'd be so surprised. But that doesn't surprise me. I feel like we're running out of time, Alf. We're reaching our time limit here. We got to go rapid fire on some of these. I'm going to give you a couple submission holds that I really like. The figure four leg lock,
absolutely.
Ric Flair.
Yeah, that makes
the
top 10.
And then the sharpshooter, Bret Hart.
Both make the top 10. I was going to say the STF matters as well, but there's so many variations of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That who does it really belong to? Bryan Danielson does one.
John Cena.
Yeah, it's too many. Just too many. So let's toss the STF. Let's put in the sharpshooter. Let's put in the figure four leg lock. Let me make a few more nominations. This one, I like it because of how it looked and how simple it was. But JBL's clothesline from hell.
Gorgeous. Yes, I love that.
First of all, the reason it looks so great is because he's killing people with it.
Yeah.
Everybody's actually confirmed this. Like, okay, the reason it looks good is not because he's one of the world's greatest wrestlers and he can make devastating moves look, you know, so great. And he's as light as a feather. No. He's killing you with a clothesline. So, yes. I would nominate that. Anything else out there that we're missing?
Oh, I got a few, man. I got a few.
How about the Crossroads to stay a little bit current?
Yeah, little roll of the dice. That was invented by an indie wrestler, I believe. And that's been a popular move for quite a long time, but certainly used most famously by Cody Rhodes right now. I do like that one. Here's one that is being used, not as a finish right now, but being used as a false finish by Damian Priest, the Razor's Edge, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. I always loved that finishing move.
That goes in the top 10, but we're going to have to give it to Razor Ramon because yes, it was the first time I ever saw that move was by Razor Ramon. So, yeah, that makes the top 10 for sure, which is going to bring me to another oldie but goodie. Everybody does this move. Everybody does it in the middle of their matches. Some have done variations of it. There's some that call it a spike DDT. But how can we not put Jake the Snake Roberts DDT.
Damien's dinner time. Yes. Damien's dinner time. That's what he said.
And I think that's a lock. That's a lock for the top 10. Because yeah, when you like saw that. It was over. Nobody ever kicked out of it. Ever.
We're missing a really famous one, Alf. That's a diamond cutter. The RKO.
Yes.
Out of nowhere.
But who do we give it to? Do we give it to DDP or Randy Orton's RKO? I would say Randy Orton's RKO. All due respect to DDP.
Yeah, and DDP is the inventor of the move. Mm-hmm. But Randy Orton has the longevity and has been doing it on a big scale for 20-plus years at this point. So, yeah, maybe you do give it to Randy Orton. I got a couple more for you. I'm going to throw them in together just so we can condense time here. I'm going to go with the stomp, the curb stomp by Seth Rollins, just because
it's iconic. It's, nobody else does it. And we know the match is just, over when it happens.
And I know you're not a fan of this guy, but he's my favorite of all time. So I got to go Sweet Chin Music, Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. So simple. You can give it to anybody, anywhere. And it's lights out when he hits it, man.
And I'm a fan of his. I'm just not a fan of his entrance. I hated his song. Okay. But he's great. Shawn Michaels is the greatest in-ring performer in the history of the sport, in my opinion.
I agree. I would go and I would go him 1 and Flair 2, but I'm not mad at anybody who puts Flair 1 and Shawn 2.
Yeah, the Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling is impossible. If you put everybody in there, then Dusty Rhodes and Vince McMahon have to be in there. So probably, if you just put
Hulk
pro
Hogan,
wrestler.
John Cena.
Yeah, it's too many. The Rock, Stone Cold. It's just too many. The Undertaker. You know?
Very difficult.
It's too many. It's just too many names. Are we missing anybody else?
That's my list right there. That's all I got. I mean, Hogan's leg drop, obviously very simple.
It's iconic as well.
Iconic and in kayfabe land, very, very effective.
Yes. So, yeah, let's put it in there. It is Hogan, you know? So, all right, let's build our top 10, and we could go out on that. Number 1, Stone Cold Stunner, right? Let's do that.
I agree. Yep.
All right. Well, what are you thinking for number 2?
On my list, I had the Tombstone Piledriver number 2.
Yeah, and we're talking about 4 decades of it, so absolutely. Let's give some love to a submission hold. The figure 4 leg lock is iconic. Who
couldn't agree more, Alf?
Who, as an 8-year-old, did not put that figure 4 leg lock on somebody to see if it hurt, and then you figured out, my God, this is the most painful move ever. And then you wonder, how the hell do you put this on somebody and not kill them? So yes, the figure four leg lock. If we ever meet, you got to teach me how to put one on and not have it hurt, because I've never had it put on me and not be in excruciating pain.
Yeah, there's really
Or is that just a bunch of friends of mine that were complete assholes when we were 12, 13 years old?
Yeah, they're just locking it in real tight. You just got to stay loose with it. But it is uncomfortable no matter what.
Yes. So that has to be number three. Okay. The DDT. Jake the Snake. He cut promos on it. People don't... did you ever remember Stone Cold cutting a promo on the Stunner? No. Jake the Snake cut a promo on the DDT, and you knew...
Promos.
If you received the DDT, it was a wrap. That was the end. Nobody ever kicked out of it. And it's a shame, actually. It's a shame that now it's just, you know, it's a transition to get to the next set of moves.
any old move is what they call it now.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'll put DDT number four. We're in agreement there. Number five... I think we got to go with either the Pedigree or the Diamond Cutter, the RKO.
You know what? Let's put the Pedigree because it's a little bit more protected.
Okay.
You know, anybody does a Pedigree. I don't remember the last time somebody kicked out of a Pedigree. It had to be huge event, huge main event at a WrestleMania. If you told me, the last time somebody kicked out of this was so-and-so, I had to take your word for it because I don't remember it. So it has to be.
Yeah, I know. Rollins has been using it as a false finish, as an homage to Triple H. But that makes sense, Triple H doing it and somebody kicking out.
Yeah, but that makes sense. That makes sense that Rollins uses it and people kick out of it because, you know, he's not the master. He doesn't know all the intricacies of locking in the Pedigree, which is essentially just smashing somebody's face in. Okay, it's
I
a very simple.
Broke my nose. When I was 13 years old, because my friend gave me a Pedigree but didn't let go of my arms and smashed my face directly into the concrete of my mom's basement.
Yeah. By the way, I would, just to give it an honorable mention, let's put it as an honorable mention. First of all, because I'm a huge fan of his, I think he's absolutely great. AJ Styles, finishing maneuver.
Styles Clash.
The Styles Clash. It's a great looking move. He moves it right into a pinning combination. But let's just put it on the outside looking in because we have too many that deserve to be in.
Yeah, I like that, though. Good. All right. So if Pedigree's number five, then Diamond Cutter RKO number
Absolutely.
Six?
Absolutely. That goes number six. And number seven, for the simplicity of it, man, I'm going to really argue for Randy Savage's off the top rope with the elbow. Number seven.
Okay. I won't argue with you on that one. I like that one.
All right. What do you have at number eight?
I think I got to go with the sharpshooter.
Let's put that
Bret
one in.
Bret Hart. I like submission holds because he can do them to anybody. And you have to, as a wrestler myself, you have to work so hard to get an audience to care about a submission finish. It's very easy to hit the big move, drop somebody on their head, and have everyone go, oh, yeah, that kicks ass. But to put somebody in a submission hold and have the other person tap out, it just takes more work to get the audience to care. And so having Bret... be able to do that for many decades in a row. We put it at number eight there. So we got a lot to choose from if we're moving
Somebody
on
Somebody in
here.
The chat says that Rikishi's ass crush has to make it in there. No, because then you have to put Yokozuna's in there.
Yokozuna, the bonsai drop.
Yeah, the bonsai drop, right? So, no, we're not putting that one in there. We haven't put a gal in here. I nominated Ronda Rousey's armbar. I think it has to go in there.
We can do that. Rousey's armbar number nine. That means we got one spot, and we have Sweet Chin Music. We have the Stomp. We have Hogan's Leg Drop. We have the Mandible Claw. We have the Razor's Edge and the Styles Clash, all on the honorable mentions list.
Okay.
Which one do you want to throw number 10?
Let's toss a few. Let's for what they are. The Super Kick, it belongs to Chris Adams. So,
Gentleman
yes.
Chris Adams.
So, yes, Shawn Michaels... delivers a great one. It looked great. It, you know, it finished great big matches. He did it at opportune times. When you saw it, you thought the match was over. But it's a move made famous by somebody else who actually did it kind of better because he was actually hitting people with it. If you watched the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Chris Adams. Yeah, he was hitting people in the face with it. So, yeah. So, let's toss that one. I'm for the stomp or the razor's edge because of how original they are. I like the stomp for the simplicity of it.
I'll tell you what, and you'll be shocked here, but I'm going to give it to the razor's edge because that was an original move invented by Scott Hall, and nobody did it better than him. Whereas, believe it or not, Seth Rollins did not invent the stomp. He took that from a Japanese wrestler. I believe it was Mare Fuji. I'm going to Google that just so people aren't like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, the razor's edge. If you saw it, Chico, it was done.
Yeah, it was just too good. And Scott Hall was such a great wrestler, great promo, great character. You know, had his demons, and maybe his career didn't reach the heights he hoped it would. But, I mean, he was a part of the NWO, which is one of the hottest factions in the history of the business. I really do love the Razor's Edge. It was a great move. And I loved doing it when I was playing video games as a kid.
Yeah, and sneak preview. Next week, I propose that we do a top 10 best gimmicks of all time.
Oh, all right. We might have to get to that.
Which, come on. Let's face it. Number one is The Undertaker. Spoiler alert, right?
yeah. I mean, you can argue a little bit, but there's not much argument
know.
To be
I
had.
Don't know if we can argue. I don't know. You know? Like, there's certain guys that are not gimmicks. Like, Seth Rollins is not a gimmick. He's Seth Rollins. You know what I mean? Or Tyler Black.
Well, he's had gimmicks, you know? He does his drip god thing and
yeah, but they're like... I don't think it's that much of a gimmick. That's like saying Ric Flair is a gimmick when he's living it. You know what I mean? I'll say gimmicks are more like completely over the top characters. Let's say, you know what I mean? Because Ric Flair's gimmick is that he's Ric Flair. That's not a gimmick. Like he lives that.
He's
like that's
the nature
who he
boy.
Is. You know? Now Hulk Hogan.
I can vouch for that.
Now, which one is the gimmick for Hulk Hogan? Is it the red and yellow? you know. Hulkamaniacs, that gimmick, or Hollywood Hogan? I would submit to you that Hollywood Hogan is the gimmick for Hulk Hogan, and that he's really the red and yellow Hulk Hogan. You know,
little elements of both in there, I think. But yeah, that's an interesting discussion to be had, and definitely something we could touch on next week if
absolutely.
Our listeners want it.
And we'll get into it. We'll absolutely get into it. But that's it for this week. If you want to become a member of our Discord and watch and listen to our shows live, you go to discord.gg/OnlyFans and you get in there for just $3 a month. We did an hour, Marek. This was a lot of fun. This will be on our feed. Enjoy it.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to The Offseason with Marek and Alf. Until next time, raise your fins, raise your glasses, and we'll talk to you next week.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.